Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 75 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host, as always. Today, we have a very special guest returning for the third time, making him the leader in the clubhouse, Victor Medina. Those of you who've been around a while know that Victor is an estate planning and elder law attorney in northern New Jersey, and that's probably the foundation of his entrepreneurial empire. He's also a certified financial planner and has a concurrent financial planning services company that he runs that supports and works with his estate planning law firm. He is the founder and creator, and as I like to say, the creative genius behind MacTrack Legal, the conference that we talk about frequently on this show that takes place in October every year. And he's written two books, and he has a radio show now and a podcast, and he's a video production empresario. So he's got his hands in a lot of projects. How he does it, I don't know, but I love talking to Victor, and I hope you enjoy this conversation and get as much out of it as I do speaking with him. So here, without further delay, is my friend Victor Medina. Victor Medina, welcome back to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey, thanks, Neil. Thanks for having me. I am so excited. This is great. I can't wait to talk to you.
I tell you what, for our listeners who've been around a while, you're going to recognize his voice because Victor is pulling away as the leader in the house of the individual who's been on this show most often. This is the third visit with Victor Medina.
So what do they call it on Saturday Night Live when you do like five shows?
I don't know.
They have a host like Alec Baldwin and Steve Martin. Like when you hit five, like you hit the, and I forget, there's like some host that was the mark, and that's how you know that you're like somebody who's arrived.
We'll have to figure that one out. Well, actually, I think you're going to end up setting the standard. So we'll judge everybody else by have they become Medina-ized. You know? But way back on episode number 3, Victor was one of my first guests. And then again, almost a year ago to the day, on episode 27. So here we are in episode going to be like 74 or 75. And I'm delighted to have Victor back with us again. And you may wonder why I keep having this guy on so often. It's because I really want to be Victor Medina when I grow up. This guy has got so many things going on. We're going to talk about a few of them today. First and foremost, he's a trust and estates and estate planning attorney, along with elder law and Medicaid planning and a whole host of legal issues in his law firm are addressed. Concurrent with that, we also have a financial services company that you run. Is that right?
Yeah, that is. Yep.
So you got that going on. He's an author, having written a book, and has a very, you'll hear a little later about a webinar that he has coming up about how you too can go about writing a book. He's the founder and creator of MacTrack Legal. And you need a better title for that.
Founder and creator? What do we want? Like birther?
I like creative genius. He's the creative genius behind MacTrack Legal, which, again, if you've been a listener to this show, you recognize that darn near half of our guests I either met at or they spoke at MacTrack Legal. And he has now added to his repertoire, he is the host of a popular radio program up there in northern New Jersey called Make It Last. I'll get you to talk about that a little bit, which is also podcast, so you don't have to be in the Northern New Jersey area to listen to it. And I think you got a couple of other things that you're kind of working on. So does that cover, just about cover all the Medina tracks?
It does. I'm not a professional sleeper, apparently. I've got no time for that, but everything else I'm handling.
Oh, and by the way, you know, loving husband and father of
thank you.
Two.
Yeah. Yeah, please let my wife know.
Yes.
I'm a little concerned they might replace me at home, but yeah, I'm there.
Still on the original wife, so good for you. Tell us just a little bit here briefly about Make It Last. How did that come about, and what is it all about?
Sure, yeah. No, and it's been a lot of fun. So the Make It Last radio show, the title of it actually is derivative from the two books that I've written. They're both sort of majorly titled Make It Last with subtitles underneath it. And I thought, well, that's a pretty good moniker for the radio show. But the books had been published, and I'd gotten a little bit of national press and local press for the books. And then the radio station, which, you know, actually broadcasts on a radio. So for our younger listeners, it's a box with dials on it. And so they said, listen, you know, we have a talk radio station. We've got some time to fill on the weekends. You know, it's not the best time in the world, 7:30 in the morning, but, you know, would you like to fill that time with a radio show? And I said, as long as I don't have to be there at 7:30 in the morning on Saturday, I got a life, I'd be happy to do that. And so we kind of got to making the deal about it, what I was going to be talking about. I mean, the fact that I'm a JD and a certified financial planner, I could kind of straddle both of those worlds. And I had done other media appearances, right? So they knew that I could be on the radio or I could be broadcasting and I wouldn't sound like a complete, you know, dundlehead about it. We went through it and I did four shows in studio so they could make sure that I was doing it correctly. And they gave me the option to actually create a home studio. So I'm speaking to you from the home studio of the Make It Last radio show. So I invested in a little bit of equipment, but it gives me the flexibility to be able to record the show when I have it on my schedule, do it ahead of time, and can kind of get broadcast out there. And as you said, you know, not only is it there live on the radio show, but we kind of negotiated for me to get the rights so that I could rebroadcast it as a podcast. And we're building. I mean, I'm not TLE levels, you know, I'm not at the Law Entrepreneur levels of subscriptions, but we've got a growing following, and, you know, you can find it on iTunes and Android, Stitcher. We've got it on all the places, and it's there half an hour. That's it. You know, it's not 3 hours of tech talk the way some of these are. You know, you're in 30 minutes, you're out 30 minutes. And I think the constraints of the commercial radio show actually helps me keep focused for just those 30 minutes.
Yeah, you have a very tight format owing to the fact that it's a recorded live broadcast. Tell our audience a little bit about some of the subjects that you're covering in Make It Last.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and I think that just to close the loop on another point, I remember going in college and one of my favorite professors was an acting teacher and I took an acting class with them. They were an artist in residence. And, you know, here I was thinking that, you know, these creative efforts all have to be born from inspiration and you just have to be inspired to be this great creative person when you did it. And his lessons were all about that first you have to be disciplined and from discipline comes creativity. And I took those lessons into, I play jazz, trumpet and other kind of music stuff, but I took those lessons to be like, oh, right. I do my rudiments, right? I do my scales. And when I know that, then in the moment, as I'm hearing the chord changes, I can be creative. So within those kind of 30-minute segments, it allows me to be a little bit more creative because I put guardrails in there. So what we do in the show is because I have the legal practice in estate planning and I have the financial services practice with the certified financial professional designation, the CFP designation, I kind of straddle both worlds talking about retirement planning and specifically addressing things for folks that are kind of post 55 and trying to navigate the rest of the time that they have. How do they get their affairs in order? How do they get their ducks in the row? How do they make sure that their nest egg is secure, you know, for that period of time? And we take things at a very high level. Since I have no product to pitch on what we're doing in there, I'm able to be really objective in what we're talking about and just provide that education. I'm a frustrated teacher, Neil. I love to be able to engage an audience and be able to kind of share information and get them on board with what I'm talking about. And this platform allows me to do that because I do seminars and workshops, but I got 20 people in front of me. You know, I talk with clients and that's 5-10 clients a week and that's max. And I'm busting at the seams streams with just that number. So if I can actually go out with the radio show and with the podcast and reach this greater audience, I really feel because I'm kind of paying that stuff back to them. And the response has been great. You know, people really do appreciate hearing things on the level, for these types of issues. And I hammer financial advisors a lot. And when I'm talking about, I think it's one of the most abusive industries and kind of what's going on. So it does give us an opportunity to get people woke, as they like to say, about those issues.
Yeah, well, I like it because it, for just that reason, you straddle both the estate planning and the financial services world. But just remind me, because you weren't a certified financial planner who became an attorney. You were a very successful attorney who then added the certified financial practitioner designation to your list of credentials. What prompted that kind of alternate path?
Well, you know, I definitely don't want to leave a very successful attorney too quickly. I mean, I really appreciate hearing that. I want to make sure the rest of the world, you know, especially my wife, hears that. But yeah, we had the practice and the practice was going well. Here's where it was born, which was I would put these plans in place and they'd be these great documents, and academically they were perfect, and as a conceptual plan, they were great. But then we had to integrate the finances with that. And so what would happen is I would send my clients out, hey, good luck with that, got the plan. Now go fill the bucket, you know, get it done. And what would happen is they would come back to me 1, 2, 3 years later. I would review what had happened. I said, well, we missed the boat on this. This was done incorrectly. This was done in a predatory fashion. These are the things that are kind of going wrong with that. So what it gave us an opportunity to think about was, you know, what do we really care about? Do we care about the production of the documents, or do we care about putting a plan in place for a family that will work when we need it? And so when we were thinking about that concept, we said, look, we're going to serve a smaller number of people, but we're going to serve them more completely. And so we said, okay, one of the ways that we're going to do this, we're going to bring the financial services back in-house. Now, it's not a requirement of doing the planning with us. If you've got somebody that you love and they do this stuff right, great, go ahead and do it. But for people that want to ensure that it gets done correctly or want the efficiencies of having it under one roof, we give them the opportunity to do that in a very, well, it's in a very beneficial way, because these things are meant to work together, and they know that the same person that's looking out for their best interests on the legal side, because that's the commitment as lawyers, right? We know, hey, at the end of the day, we have no choice but to put our clients' interests first, and we do so gladly, gleefully. You know, this is what we want to do. In that same fashion, we're able to do that in the financial sector, and they benefit for that. So I needed to get all the credentials to get that up in place. Need to get an insurance license. Need to get a securities license. I needed to be versed in the area of planning. Now, I really was happy with the idea that I could accomplish getting the CFP in about 5 weeks, because my experience met the requirements, the education met the requirements. I was signing on to the ethics, but it was really about the exam. So I took the exam in about 5 weeks or so, and then got the rest of the credentials. I will tell a funny story, though, which is my credentials were held up because there was another Victor Medina who had been busted for narcotics in New Jersey, and the CFP wanted to know why I hadn't disclosed that. Well, the guy was born 15 years before I was, and I kind of let them know that. But it was good that I was a lawyer, because I could jump onto the system and pull up this guy's conviction record and kind of show the CFP board, hey, that's not this Victor Medina. You know, just kind of want to let you know we're two different people.
That's hysterical. And now, let's not just gloss over the fact that you were able to get the CFP certification in 5 weeks. It's not just something that you sit down and take the exam based on common knowledge that you've acquired over the course of time. You had to take the time to prep for it and study for it. And it's the highest level of certification in the financial planning world that you can get. So it's nothing to sneeze at. And I'm sure it wasn't easy.
Well, thanks. Yeah, no, it was. I don't want to be falsely modest in the sense that, you know, it was a lot of work. And to my friends, when I passed the exam, I must have seemed more excited than when I passed the bar. And I think the reason was, like, I went to law school for 3 years. Like, if I didn't pass the bar, you know, it said something about what I'd been setting out to do for 3 years, you know. But this wasn't in my area of at least 3 years worth of study. So I must have been more excited having passed that, at least to them, because they're like, this is the CFP exam. I'm like, yeah, but look, I passed this thing, you know, and it didn't in 5 weeks. So it was a lot of work, but it was good work because, you know, we need to get educated on these areas, not us in terms of the lawyers necessarily. Estate planning lawyers, I think there's a benefit to doing that. But as the general public, you know, kind of understanding what insurance and investments and education and retirement planning and taxes, you know, all these things are at the crux of where people lead a comfortable or good lives or not. That a lot of anxiety is produced around these issues. So if we can help guide in that area, you know, I consider it part of kind of just good public service.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And more, you know, back in the day, we didn't have to worry about it. We didn't have to think about it. We had our, you know, our pension at work or else our 401k, and you made a few selections and you didn't think about it anymore. Now, more and more people have to worry about it. They have to think about it. And oftentimes they turn it over to somebody else. They outsource that responsibility. And as you've pointed out on your show, and you've alluded to here a couple of times, you have to be careful to whom you, you know, trust that responsibility, because, look, it can have disastrous effects if done incorrectly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And hey, listen, for your listeners, let's kind of jujitsu this thing and say that one of the benefits from this is as somebody becomes, you know, if there's been any lessons that I've learned as to the business of law from it, is that as somebody establishes themselves as a credible source of information, as an expert in an area, you shine a light that draws people in. You know, it doesn't have to be about sales with the kind of slimy ooze coming off of it. And we don't do that. All of the kind of marketing that I'm doing is really education-based, and I want to empower my prospective clients to do good business with us by providing this education ahead of time, paying it ahead. So this 30 minutes, I don't really get paid to do that on the show. For the book, I make, I think, $6 for every book that I sell. So definitely not filling up the college fund for the three boys. But it gives me the opportunity to share this information wide. And then, you know, we convert that into opportunities to speak with people. So if it's a workshop that's set up around the talk, if it's the radio show credential that gets me other opportunities, if we send old episodes of the radio show out to prospective clients that are concerned about a particular area, it kind of works together. Like, for instance, when we broadcast this show that we're recording a couple of weeks earlier from that, I know because we're recording a little bit earlier, right? We're going to be talking about people who need to plan for somebody with dementia, and they need to plan around those issues. Well, that's a great 30 minutes for somebody that's in a crisis mode, and we're able to pay that forward to them, and they might decide to come back and help us, you know, ask us to help with planning. So there is a business relationship to what we're doing, but it's one that is just so much fun to do and to get done on a regular basis. Like, I love recording the radio show. I love sending it out there. I love sending out the newsletters that we send out on a weekly basis. That's a lot of fun to me, and it happens to have good business results.
And, you know, Victor is a consummate pro there. He actually interjected in the conversation. Our listeners may not have picked up on it, but he actually interjected kind of the buzzwords for the title of his two books, Ducks in a Row and Nest Egg, I think were your key phrases. So let's just make it clear. What's the name of the two books, and how
Yeah, Neil. So they're both on Amazon. And of course, you know, being Mac guy, right? They got to be on the iBookstore or else I just get no credibility in life at all. Right. So we have two books. One's called Make It Last, How to Get and Keep Your Legal Ducks in a Row. And the other one is Make It Last, Ensuring Your Nest Egg is Around as Long as You Are. And so we have them kind of keyed to the two branches of my professional life. The ducks in a row is the legal planning. And there's a lot of marketing that we do around getting ducks in a row. We call our foundational planning the ducks in the row planning. So we have that around there. And the book cover is maroon, just like the logo for the law side. And then we've integrated on the financial side, a blue logo with a blue cover, you know, with the idea that the nest egg is something that somebody is saving for retirement. And that is kind of like a pre-retirement guidebook. Each of them is 108 pages. Now, Neil, Ask me why there are 108 pages.
Victor, why are each of these books exactly 108 pages in length?
Because they're self-published. And so when we get to Amazon producing them, Amazon charges me $2.15 to produce the book, whether it's one page or 208 pages, 108 pages. If it's 109 pages, they charge me $2.21. So if I know I have 108 pages for $2.15, I'm going to put all 108 pages in there and produce it for $2.15.
Outstanding. Now, I happen to know a little bird whispered in my ear. You know, we're talking about, you know, Victor's empire here, so to speak. Here he runs a, as I said, successful law practice, a successful financial services firm that supports that law practice as well. And we mentioned earlier that its founder and creator and I like creative genius behind MacTrack Legal. So that's coming up. And there's a couple of things involved with book writing and video productions that are going to be involved in this year's version of MacTrack Legal. So let's chat about that for a bit.
Absolutely. So the conference, which I am without shame happy to say it's the best conference in the world. The conference is going to be this October, and it's going to be back at Disney again, and it's going to be between October 19th through the 21st, a Thursday through Saturday.
And this time without a hurricane.
No
right?
hurricane, but absolutely no hurricane guaranteed. So show up. And last year, one of the talks that was really well received was a talk that I gave about how to create a book to promote your business and how to establish yourself as an expert in your area. And I gave this talk and I gave some tools at the end. And one of the greatest things that happened is one of a regular MacTrack attendees actually went out and wrote his book and kind of published it. And we congratulated him. And I thought, well, you know, this is a talk that we should share with the general public. So one of the ways that we're going to promote this year's conference is on August 24th at 1 p.m., we're going to reprise that talk. So if you're at all interested or curious about how to use self-publishing and a book to help promote your practice so that you can grow what you have going on there, maybe leverage it into a podcast and a radio show if you'd like, then what we're going to do is we're going to reprise that talk for a free webinar. And if you attend the webinar, I'm going to give a code at the end, which will give you a discount to sign up to attend this year's MacTrack, because MacTrack is really in a kind of a conglomerate of tech-related issues, practice management-related issues, you know, just how to grow your business. I think that it fits so well in terms of the mission of the listeners for, you know, for what TLE is trying to do and the listeners that are there who are intent on making their practices great and growing them. This is the kind of conference that can help them do that. And I got to be honest with you, Neil, I don't make much money on this conference. Like, I kind of pay for my own flight down there and I don't have to pay to attend. That's basically the profit margin in there. So when I'm trying to draw people to the conference, it's really because I believe that they can get so much from attending and take it back into their own practices and continue to grow. So I want to do the webinar, which, by the way, if you're interested in, you can go to MacTrackLegal.com/booktalk. And if you go to that link, it will take you to the webinar. So MacTrack is MacTrack Legal, LEGAL.com/booktalk. If you go there, it will redirect you to the sign up for the webinar. It's a free webinar. It's a useful one. We're going to give you the tools that we gave away in last year's conference for how to, you know, kind of make some progress so you can kind of get the ball rolling to get this book done. And then you can write your own book.
Well, I will tell you that I was there last year when this talk was given. And, you know, there's a lot of times when you sit down and listen to, you know, somebody who does a presentation at a conference or even a webinar, you leave thinking, well, I think they only told me about 10% or 20% of what I really needed to know. It sounded more like a hook to get me to do something. I was struck by the fact, and I know everybody who was there was struck by the fact that you laid the whole process out from A to Z, soup to nuts. And I remember when you were done, there was a little bit of a almost stunned silence from the audience. We're like, wow, that is phenomenal.
Oh, well, thank you.
And the member that, or the guest that you were speaking of who went out, that's Jeff Alford?
Yeah, it's Jeff. Yep.
Yeah, so who's been a guest on the show, went out and wrote his book right after that, within 3 months. And I saw him down at Ernie Svensson's boot camp down in New Orleans, and he showed me the book, and it's terrific.
Yeah. Isn't that great? Isn't it great to see him publish that? I was so happy.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. So for our listeners, if you think you want to write a book as a vehicle for promoting your law firm, take my word for this. Just sign up for this webinar, do the webinar. You'll be amazed at how much information you learn and how really straightforward the process is that Victor will lay out. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work you have to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that strengthens your practice and can save you hours each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and more cases without adding stress or chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. No more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. And Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone on your team is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Getting a new website design can be a real pain point for attorneys. You're busy practicing law and running your firm, and the last thing you can afford is to waste time dealing with an incompetent design team that doesn't understand what you're trying to accomplish. So if you've been putting off that new website for your law firm, I get it. But what if I told you that getting a new website created for your law firm doesn't have to suck? My friends at Spotlight Branding pride themselves on their responsiveness, on great communication, and on delivering results for their clients. And unlike many law firm marketing companies out there, Spotlight Branding doesn't lock their clients into long-term contracts. In fact, they offer a no-risk, money-back guarantee on their work so you can have total peace of mind while you work with them. I trust the team at Spotlight Branding, as you know, to build and manage my website, as well as manage my social media strategy, my monthly email newsletter, and a whole lot more. I recommend them to solo and small firm attorneys every chance that I get. They're currently offering a special gift for our listeners, so visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE to learn more. Brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. One of the things that I've been talking about on the show and other people have asked me, well, I'm not a Mac guy. You know, I'm not an Apple products person. Well, we won't hold that against you. But the question was, is what would I get out of going to this conference? And I tell people, look, it's certainly Mac-centered, but there's a whole heck of a lot that's presented that's not Apple-oriented. Take, for example, Victor's presentation on how to write a book or Brett Burney's discussion last time on web-based note-taking systems like OneNote.
Right.
So there's an awful lot that you can get out of the conference and not be a Mac user. So
yeah, I'll give you a couple of ideas for this year too, Neil, because you're absolutely right. While there is a bias towards kind of Mac-related stuff, you might go there and be convinced, you know, you might get converted to it.
It will rub off.
Yeah, it will. You'll be like, oh, these people are cool and their devices look cool and it looks like their practices are banging, so let's go ahead and follow along with them.
And just and their tablets not being, you know, being recalled or something like
that. Right, or set on fire.
Set on fire.
Let me give you like about five things that are going on in this Mac track that have nothing to do with actually being Mac user.
Perfect.
So one of them, we're going to talk about communicating by video. So Mark Metzger is a buddy of mine, happens to be a longtime Mac track speaker. He's also a practice coach for other attorneys. I know he's been on TLE in the past. And He's going to talk about how to communicate by video. Now, this is one of the things that has been transformative in my practice. I record a weekly video. I send it out. We use videos in the pre-education process before somebody comes in, gives them an opportunity to establish a rapport and a relationship with us. And I don't have to do that on a one-on-one basis. It's kind of set, and we do it, you know, for every client. And it's already been recorded. And he's going to give you, just like we did it on the book talk, he's going to give you the tools to actually go out and get this done so you walk away ready to implement. So we're going to talk about video.
That's been on my list to do for 6 months, so I can't wait. Oh my God.
Oh, this is going to be a good one. You're going to have, well, first of all, it's going to cost you some money because you're going to shop.
Well, yeah.
But once that's all set up, he actually has three different levels, by the way. He's got budget, you know, he's got mid-level, and he's got like Rockefeller money. And so he'll give you kind of how to start out with the budget. And he'll actually give you a buying list of what you'll buy in which order to improve your equipment, right? So it's not necessarily that you get the best camera first, you know? And so he'll going to give you actually what to buy in what order as you improve your equipment so that you can prove it. And you can stay at the base level if you want, but he's going to give you each one of these kind of like how to grow into it as you're going to see some results from it. And then I'm really proud that one of my, you know, friends and longtime team members, Juliana, who goes to me with to coaching and helps me build these practices, she's going to give a presentation about how to hire and train employees. So one of the secrets to growth is leverage. We can't be relying on our time in order to grow the practice because that is necessarily limited. So we know that we have to leverage with people. How do we find great people? How do we train great people? Well, she's going to give you the answer, not from the lawyer's perspective, because by the way, as lawyers, we suck at it. But she's been my chief operating officer for a number of years, and she's going to give you from the, I actually have to manage people. I have been hired. I've had to hire other people. And she's going to give you a tool set from there, and she's going to present on that. Then we've got another new speaker, a guy named Ronnie Morton, and Ronnie is just a tech whiz, but he's going to talk about some web-based ways of automating your marketing. So he's going to talk about and use content management systems, how to set them up, and give people kind of a roadmap. Now, in the past, he has given away his actual like Infusionsoft campaigns so that you can see how they're set up with screenshots, and you can go and replicate it if you want. So you don't have to design it from whole cloth. You could hire a consultant if you want, but you're going to walk away with that stuff just the way it is, right? And you can go and implement it. And then on the last day, we have Steve Riley, who's a practice coach, and he's one of the founders and principals of Atticus. He's been on the show, hasn't he?
Yes, also Neil? A past guest. Yep.
Awesome. He's fantastic, and he is my guru. I worship at the altar of Steve Riley. And he's going to talk about time management for lawyers. So how are we actually going to get all this done and why it's one of the core principles to growth? They have four pillars that they talk about in Atticus, and time management is one of them. And so he's going to give a presentation on that for the MacTrack people. So those are four or five things that if all you did was show up in the conference and learn that, that would pay dividends on what it costs to get there and attend the conference.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you, you coupled that with the webinar of the reprisal of how to write a book. So now you've got how to write a book, how to do a video, how to hire the people that you need to staff, how to do web-based marketing, and how to manage all your time so that you can be as productive as somebody like Victor Medina. That is worth the price of admission 10 times over. So it's the reason that I go to this conference every year, because it's something I learn, you know, tons of things every year from this conference. And I've gone to other conferences on an annual basis, and it's not the same.
And I hope you don't mind me saying this, Neil. I don't comp you. I make you pay, just like everybody
else. Right, exactly. Right.
You got money in stake. You have skin in the game on this.
Exactly. I've already booked my flights, and I'm all set and ready to be there come October. And by the way, just also a little shout out here. We all know that really Juliana is the one who makes your office run.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Without her, you'd be nothing.
Oh, I'd be less than nothing. Yeah, absolutely.
Now you mentioned Steve Riley and Atticus, you know, a very well-known and respected coach for attorneys. And I wanted to spend the remainder of our time talking a little bit about coaching for attorneys, because, you know, that's how you and I met. Well, actually, technically, we really met originally at MacTrack Legal.
But that's how we got to be friends, right? Because we would see each other regularly. And we're like, I can tolerate this guy. He's a good dude.
Yeah. And then, you know, we both worked with the same coach, rest his soul, a former guest here on the show, Mark Miranda. And so you've been a person who's believed in coaching as a growth mechanism for attorneys for a long time. And so I'd like to just hear your views a little bit about why you think that's important and how does one go about identifying a coach that can help them grow?
Yeah, it's a really important topic. And for me, as you mentioned, I've put it in the category of the secret sauce. I think it's the competitive advantage that I've been able to exploit and helps me grow. I don't like to take a lot of time on self-congratulatory things. I don't know that I would put myself in a category of awesome, but to the extent that somebody else does, I think that this is part of the secret sauce there. So yeah, if we've got an extra time, I want to talk a little bit about that, Neil, because I think that coaching for me has underscored a few principles that I think they're important for lawyers that want to grow. The first is that it gives the opportunity to remove yourself from the actual day-to-day practice of law to be thinking about the business and working on the business rather than working in the business. And so coaching can take a few different flavors. You can do the coaching that we've done in the past, which is group coaching. So there's coaching programs that will meet on a regular basis, either quarterly or semi-annually, and they will go ahead and bring you out of the office, sitting around other people that care about growing their practices, and then you'll work on principles that will advance the ball for whatever you're doing in your practice. So there's a group coaching element, and then there's an individual coaching element. So you can meet with one person on a regular basis. And I've always distinguished the two by someone's sort of need for accountability and the ability to implement or not. So on the group coaching, you are pulled out. You're given these ideas that you should go back and implement, projects that you should work on. And here's the kind of secret ninja part about it. You might walk away with 10 things, but if you only accomplish 3, you are super awesome because that's 3 more than the person down the street accomplished in that same quarter. So, you know, we can't be hard on ourselves by not nailing everything that's in the project list. And I've always taken that kind of Zen approach. I said, all I'm trying to do is knock a few of these things out. And that's, first of all, few things that I didn't do last quarter and a few more things than the people down the street didn't do. So if you're able to knock that out on your own, then you can get very far with group coaching because it will give you the opportunity to reset. I always love the quarterly schedule because those 90 days, I focus, I get a few things done. Clearly, I get distracted. I get knocked off the ball. This is just what life is. But then I come back again. I have the opportunity to reset and look at these things anew, find new areas. Hey, I might have to change course on the boat. You know, got changed direction a little bit because this last quarter highlighted some things for me. But then I get to go back and try it again. And that's one of these principles. I mean, you're a martial artist, Neil. You know that the idea is you get up and you try it again, right? You have the opportunity to try it again. And so from that idea, I love the group coaching. But it works for me because I'm a very good implementer of these ideas. I can drive myself for the next 90 days to actually knock a few of these things out. If you have some accountability issues, if you are comfortable lying to yourself and not actually getting stuff done.
Guilty.
Right? So then the individual coaching helps with that. Now you can replace the group coaching with it. You can add to it. But the idea that someone holds you accountable is how you are actually getting the stuff done as opposed to just thinking about getting the stuff done. Now, it doesn't have to be a formal coach. I know that in the past, you can do a group coach and do accountability with another coaching member. Now, the sauce for that is you've got to respect the person on the other side of it, right? Because if you both are happy to not respect each other, then you'll be complicit with one another in not getting the stuff done. But you can do it with a group buddy and a coaching, you know, kind of accountability friend throughout that. But the idea is that you put regular time into it. Now, one of the sauces for that is it's got to be on the schedule, Neil, right? It's got to be calendared. For me, Fridays are our implementation days. I set aside time to work with Juliana. We work on the business. We're dedicated for it. We've got retreats. I do things where I coach other members in our firm to how they're going to grow and what projects they're going to do, both personal and professional. And, you know, we set aside the time because we find it important. It is worth sacrificing work time and things that could be client-based time to do this because it pays dividends. It's on an order of magnitude on how it helps us grow. But you have to set aside the time, and coaching is fantastic because you can't see from inside of where you are what you need to do to go next. That's what the outside view allows you to do.
Yeah. And so I've worked with a couple of coaches, and I now recognize, as I said, guilty. I recognize what my weaknesses are, and I'm still trying to work on resolving those. But how do you go about finding the right coach and not spinning your wheels, you know, looking at something that's not going to be productive? Is there a methodology, or do you have some advice, or?
I'm normally really quick with an answer. And in this area, I'm a little bit more, I admit to being better, more lucky than good on it, having met the right people along the way. But I've certainly seen enough posers out there who, you know, look at coaching as their escape from actually practicing law.
Well, exactly. And I think that's usually the hurdle that a lot of attorneys in particular have to get over or find themselves facing. Like, I hear people saying all the time, well, if he's such a good businessman and attorney, why is he coaching and not running a multi-million-dollar law practice?
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. So, you know, if we go back and use Steve Rowley as an example, when we got hooked up with him, when Steve was first brought into Mark's company as an outside coach to provide a coaching program for Mark's clients, one of the reasons why Mark settled on Steve is because he was somebody that had walked the walk. He was an example of what success could be. He had built two different law practices. He had built one on a divorce and family law, and he had built one in an estate planning and elder law, each of them growing to over $1 million in revenue. And he made, you know, some shifts on that, sold his practice, sold it successfully. And when I talked to him about his transition, he said, you know, I had done all that I needed to do in building this twice. And I knew that I could rinse and repeat that pretty effectively. And I was sort of not challenged by that any longer. He said, I had a choice at that time. I could have gone into financial services or could have gone into coaching. And I decided to go into coaching because there was less regulation about how to set that up versus financial services. And it gave me the freedom to do things like travel and teach. So, you know, Steve has a very compelling story about how he got to coaching, even though he had already been a successful practitioner. And I think that that's one of the litmus tests that's out there. Like, for instance, we talked about Metzger. And Mark Metzger has gotten into coaching as well. Well, he has a successful practice, you know, and he has a successful practice in a different way than what Steve had. So his model is built on leveraging lower cost transactions through technology. But he's somebody who has demonstrated success in that. And so you can look at that and say, oh, well, he's actually kind of been there before. And, you know, it'd be somebody good to talk to. So I look at a prior track record. I mean, I don't know that I'd be so presumptuous just to say, well, show me your returns, right? So show me the tax returns that says you actually built what you did. But I would look at that, and I would also ask for references. So if you find somebody that is a successful attorney who talks about coaching, ask them what they're doing and who they're doing it with. Because many times they will be very honest about who they're with. They'll say, he's good. He kind of talks to me. He's friendly. But it really doesn't help me come up with innovative ideas. Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to skip that person, you know? Right. Or you talk to somebody who says, he's fantastic. You know, every time I've got a problem, he helps with me. You know, I attribute my success to this individual, this program, their principles. Then you look at that and say, do I kind of like that person? Would I like to, you know, be where they're at? Does that seem to me to be, something to aim towards? And if the answer is yes, now you can go investigate that a little bit more. But as I said to you, I've been more lucky than good because in the sense of having been Mark's client and Mark bringing on Steve. I mean, Mark became the curator of a good coach by bringing Steve in. And he recognized that as good of a coach as Mark is on some things day to day, I would talk to him on the phone. I know you did as well. He knew that there were some practice management things that Steve was better at and actually went into his pocket to pay Steve to come to that coaching program and teach because he knew his clients were going to be better for it. So I got lucky that he went ahead and did that. And then as I sort of graduated through that program and needing more from it, you know, Steve having something else for me to go to another group coaching program, which I'm involved in called Dominate Your Market. which is really for practitioners that are established already, have a team leader, are looking to take it from kind of like, if most lawyers are at the just technician level, they own their business, the business owns them, you know, then the next level from that is sort of like a competent professional, you know, that they're out there and they're running a business, but they're not running it efficiently. The next level above that is market leader. And so that's somebody that is really just an equity owner in their practice, coaching great team members, but there's actually nothing drawing them back in. And we're getting better and better about doing that. I'll give you a good example about that. So there are plenty of listeners here who do on a transactional basis, things like estate planning, or they might do bankruptcy, or they might do something where, you know, it's not litigation, or it's not based on the awesome reputation of this super practitioner. Okay. So for that, we've actually migrated to non-attorney initial consults. So now the revenue that's generated in my firm is not dependent on me whatsoever. It's actually met, closed, and collected by staff members. Now, that's an important distinction in the practice because it gives us profitability not dependent on my existence. I can go away for a while. We make money. I can get injured and we continue to make money. It's a two-way benefit. It's a benefit to me as the practice and as an equity owner. It's also a benefit to my team members, right? I owe them a business that will continue if something happens to me along the way. If I get sidelined for 6 months with some kind of illness, they still will have a job because assistance has been around that. So once I realize that that's the structure, that revenue is generated by not me, somebody else, then my success is determined by my ability to coach that person to be great, to coach a team to be great. And so I become the coach of a great team as opposed to being a practitioner of anything in particular. And that's where we're moving to in our practices.
Well, as a final wrap-up question, then I would ask, how do you respond to people who then say, but I didn't go to law school to become the coach of people, the mother of dragons. I went to practice law.
Oh, you know, I think that's here's how I would respond, that you want to do that at your choice rather than it being dictated to you, right? So if your situation is you have no other option but to engage in the practice because it owns you, it has put a collar around you, you don't own a business. You're not an entrepreneur. You are essentially a hobbyist that happens to be at a very professional level with some credentials, some licensing, and some malpractice coverage. At the end of the day, you haven't taken that step to remove yourself out. Now, if you do that step and you of your own volition, step back in because there's shit you like to do that's awesome, great. Now you've established it as a business and you're doing it at your election. And it means that if you needed to step away because you can't control if illness is going to strike you, you will have something to come back to. And so that, I think, is the distinction, is that you're doing it as a choice rather than it being dictated to you without any choice.
Well, I'm going to ask you one last question here, Victor. Clearly, our listeners can see how passionate and enthusiastic you are about all the endeavors that you're involved in. How do you motivate yourself? I mean, you know, do you have to get up in the morning and splash the cold water on your face, throw down 3 cups of coffee, and, you know, give yourself a pep talk to run into the office and dominate all these ventures that you're doing? Or is it self-motivating, or just how do you keep it up? Because I know a lot of people are just exhausted listening to you.
Wait, I got a whole rest of the day. We're only about 9 o'clock in the morning.
I know, but I'm tired just listening to all the things that you've got planned for the day.
Well, it's funny because I've been in here since about 7 o'clock in the morning. I've recorded 2 videos, uploaded some marketing automation. You know, it's funny. I've got done stuff and I got some more stuff to do. I would say this, you know, first the motivation came out of desperation. I needed to make payroll, make mortgage payment. You know, so
got 3 boys to raise.
Yeah, exactly, right? I've got 3 kids. They want to actually eat food rather than cardboard. And so I've got to make that happen for them. So there's a good period of time where it was just something that that was dictated to me. I had to do it. There was no other choice. I was a sole breadwinner and I had to get it done. So I first born it from there. Then after that, after you kind of crossed over the threshold, said I'm not as security conscious as I once was, things are kind of humming. There's a love for what I do because I'm inspired by seeing people do well. There's two elements of that. I either see them do well because they're my clients. Great. Then I have a tremendous passion to see them succeed. And I want to be able to provide that. I see my role in this sort of, if lawyers are largely these born from these Judeo-Christian upbringings, you know, kind of thing like, oh, I got to help somebody. I want to help them completely. I want to see them so improve their lives that there's nothing that brings me down. And I get the opportunity to meet with some great people. My clients are fantastic. That can help them. Now, that wasn't always the case, Neil, right? I would see sucky people, but as I better defined who I was going to serve, as I said before, it created a light that attracted people in. You know, it shone a light out there and they saw it. It was a beacon and they came to what we're doing, but it was with a lot of work to do that. So now I meet regularly with great people. I don't see some not some great people. And I'm crystal clear about what a great client looks like. And because I've immersed myself in a world where I'm seeing great clients for me, then it feeds and fuels this passion for wanting to serve them. Then on the other side, I have fantastic team members. I have people around me who I want to see succeed. I've kind of crossed that threshold where my success is better defined by watching them succeed than myself, right? I'm not introspective on that. I'm facing outwards. So now I want to see them do so, so well that I'm easily fueled to do that. The passion comes out to say, I want to see you do fantastic. And I'm going to do whatever it takes to do that. Not only because there's a direct relationship to my success. Yes, that's accurate. But I'm now driven by watching you grow, blossom, do the things that you're going to be awesome at, serve our clients, have a career path, all of these things that are elements of you know, I suppose, good leadership. But I want to see all those things in place. And it's easy at that point in time, Neil. I've got tons of energy and I don't see it as work. You know, it doesn't come off as something that's any kind of drudgery.
And I think clearly that's why you're successful. And as I said, I want to be Victor Medina when I grow up. I think you're just an inspiration to a lot of people. And I can't wait to see you again. We're going to put all of this in our show notes with the reference to the webinar link on the 24th of August, MacTrack Legal, October 19th to the 21st. We're going to have the links to Victor's books in here. All Victor all the time. That's our mantra today. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of all the things you do to be a guest on The Law Entrepreneur one more time.
Well, thank you, Neil. And by the way, thank you for putting out this show. This show has taken a lot of root in terms of people loving what you're sharing. So you are to be commended as well for putting a great show out there that's helped a lot of people. But thanks for having me on.
It's been a lot of fun. And it's largely due to folks like yourself and Mark Metzger and Steve Riley and all the people that we've talked about. So thanks again, Victor, for being on The Law Entrepreneur. Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.